Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All participants will be in listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. At that time, please press star followed by the number one to ask a question. Today's conference is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'd now like to turn the call over to Denise Merrill, Connecticut Secretary of State. You may begin.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. Well, here we are in the home stretch. I know there's been a lot of preparation going on. I'm sure many of you have heard about this surge in voter registration, and I'm sure you're living it right now. So, you know, as always, thank you for paying attention to the kinds of things we're sending out. I know we've been sending a lot of information out, and I hope it's been helpful. And today's call is your opportunity to ask questions if you need to, or listen to the advice you're going to get from our attorneys, and they'll be introducing themselves in a minute. But, of course, I want to thank them for their participation, as always. We have a very experienced team by now, and we've done a great job, and the last few elections have been smoother than ever before. But, of course, there are always new things to come. And, of course, this year we're very focused on cybersecurity due to all the attention nationally to this. So we will be in the news today, and so I just be aware of that and listen carefully to the kinds of things that we hear about here at the state level that are going on. But you are really, really the front line in all this, and you are the ones that are not only responsible, but I think in a good way, in charge of our democracy. And this is an important day next week. So. I know some of you have heard we are having a nor'easter this weekend, a powerful, I guess, reminder of what happened in 2011 and 2012. So there are always new things going on. You never know exactly what to anticipate, but we hope we'll try to get through that today. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Scott Bates, Deputy Secretary of the State, for further information and introductions. So I'll be signing off now, and good luck. And if we can do anything at all from our office, please let us know. Okay, Scott.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. And I'm speaking to you today from the Secretary's office with our entire elections team here that you know by name. And as the Secretary said, that's because we're one team. There are no Republicans or Democrats on Election Day when it comes to what we do. We're the guarantors of the system of democracy in our country. And in times like these, it's more important than ever that people have confidence in what we do. And working together, we're going to do it. I've had the opportunity in the last year to visit every town in this state and see many, many of you from Greenwich to Griswold and Easton to East Hartford and all the way to Norfolk and to New Haven. And the one thing that comes to me is that in all those visits was I could see what you do, and I was going to imagine on Election Day what you're doing. So just to let you know that on Election Day, we're thinking of you. We're seeing you in your town and in your city in our minds, and we're with you. And it's going to be a great day, and we are ready. And without further ado, Peggy Reeves.
Thank you, Deputy Secretary Bates. This is Peggy, and I especially want to thank all of you this year. It was an unprecedented year in terms of changes on the ballots, revisions, candidates dropping out. I really thank you all for your patience and understanding, and I thank all of your town clerks as well. Again, we hope that we have put the majority of that behind us, and we're now going forward as we look forward to Election Day, November 6th. We have a lot to talk about today, and so I want to get started as quickly as possible. I do want to mention that we're joined in this room today with Ted Bromley, who will also be speaking to you. We also have Lou Button, another staff attorney, Shannon Berquist, which many of you may know because she teaches the certification classes, has joined us for several weeks before Election Day to help us get ready for election. So we appreciate her assistance. And Shannon Wigley is with us as well. So again, I want to get started. We're going to be covering multiple topics on today's call. We're going to give you some advice preparing for EDR this year. We're going to be sharing some best practices and some general reminders. And at the end of our discussion, we will be taking your questions. Quickly, I want to remind you all that we are looking for your EDR location. The deadline to give us that location is tomorrow, Friday. We will be posting all of the EDR location sites on Monday on our website. So please be sure to get back to us no later than tomorrow. Email Kathy Womack at our office. She's kathy.womack@cp.gov, or call her at 860-509-6117. As Secretary Merrill mentioned, we never know what the weather will bring us. So I want to make sure that everyone takes a minute now to review their emergency plans. In the event that something out of the ordinary happens on Election Day, this plan will be your guide. If it's not up to date, it will not be helpful. So let me start quickly about preparing for Election Day registration. We think it's most important for all of you, and I know you all do a good job with this, is to maximize the opportunity for your citizens to register in advance. As you all know, October 30th is the deadline. That deadline for online voter registration is extended until 11:59 p.m., so we will make sure that our online site is open until that time. So we hope that you can promote the online registration locally through local press or any other town networks, including your own. We suggest that you also invite all of your residents to use our voter lookup tool on our website. So you would encourage voters to look their own records up. They'll be able to know whether they are in fact registered and the correct location of their polling place. If in fact they find they're not registered, and they need to update their record, it's important that they do it now rather than waiting until after the deadline. And then I'm going to actually turn it over to Ted so he can talk to you a little bit more about the specifics about how we'd like to set up the EDR sites and what folks should do as they wait in line.
Thanks, Peggy. This is Ted. I hope everybody is doing well. And again, I can't reiterate enough what everybody else has said about being prepared. The weather changing as it does. Just make sure that you review those emergency plans. Review with your local school districts, etc., about things that can happen. I do remember getting a phone call from a person who said that the school was not going to plow the driveway because school was canceled and the sidewalks were not going to be plowed, and that was a polling place. So please do that. But in terms of Election Day registration, a couple of reminders, lessons learned, etc. The first is that as everybody has sort of inquired or suggested in the past, certainly although the deadline for online voter registration officially would be the 30th, we will turn back on the online voter registration system to be used on Election Day. So we'll turn it back on, that morning. And I know that there are several of you out there who have used the online voter registration system either with tablets or setting up kiosks or computer terminals or whatever, so that individuals who are standing in line can use the online system to fill out the registration form while they wait. And then when they get up to the counter, their information is already into Centralized Voter Reg, so you do not have to waste time entering that. So we support that. That's okay with us, and it's actually a very good idea. In terms of the estimating of the numbers for Election Day registration, we would encourage you to sort of look at the numbers for both 2014 and 16. We know that 16 was not a gubernatorial, but if you look at 14 and 16 and sort of like split the hairs there, you'll probably come out in the ballpark. It's interesting. Don't forget. Somebody was telling me earlier this morning that Joe Biden is visiting somewhere in Connecticut. If anybody knows, they can chime in. Hartford, thank you. Hartford,
Friday.
On Friday. So, visits like that can certainly generate increased interest. So just, you know, please be aware of that. Please be aware of your surroundings, and let's make sure that we don't either run out of regular polling place ballots or EDR location, that we have enough staff there. In the EDR handbook that we put together several years ago, there's a little grid there that some of your colleagues helped us put together in terms of to help you to estimate the turnout there for your EDR location. And we will be following up with you regarding the estimates, so hopefully everybody will be on the same page on that. In terms of the EDR location and the staffing or the computer access. So the first thing that I would say is that I am the lucky one to have an office that sits right next door to Steve Mason. And I can hear many, 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 many of you call every day regarding a reset of a CVR password or wanting to add somebody to CVR. So please take care of that before Election Day or a couple of days before Election Day. You know, if you know that you're going to be adding a couple of additional users to CVR, do that now, you know, because there is no guarantee that if you wait that Steve Mason and our staff are going to be able to get to everybody if you flood us in the last couple of days. So please do that. Same goes for election management system as well. You know, we've had to heighten the security and all the passwords. We don't do that to be evil. We do that because we need to do that with the cybersecurity threats. So, you know, please take care of that kind of stuff. But in terms of additional staffing, in that memo that we sent out in 2013, we advised approximately one staff member for every 100 EDR voters. Obviously, you have some history with Election Day registration now, so you know you can use your own estimates as well, but certainly make sure that we don't get phone calls, and I won't mention town names, but where the EDR location is set up with just the two registrars of voters manning it with a line wrapping around the block. That we will not receive that as a friendly call. So please make sure that you have your EDR staff. Again, centralized voter reg, you can access, you can have several terminals accessing that simultaneously. If you anticipate having use more workstations than you have in previous years, again, please give us a call so that we make sure that your router and your connections can handle the amount of traffic that you might have in your town. So that's an important consideration. Also, make sure that you, if you're going to use multiple users, make sure that you have individual user credentials for each user. And we say that because of the increased security, and also for you, because by using a unique user ID for each one of your EDR workers, there's an audit log, and we can tell what happened to each voter and who did what. So that's very useful. Also, don't forget that locally you have the ability, using your super user ID, the user ID that begins with SSVR, so S as in Sam, S as in Sam, Registrar Voters, SSVR, and then your town tax code, you have the ability to set up those local users. So again, if you've either lost your user ID or you have no idea what I'm talking about when I'm talking about a super user ID, call us now rather than wait. Okay, so in terms of communication, also please be sure that you have some type of communication set up between your EDR location and your polling places. And, you know, some towns have gone to cell phones as opposed to worrying about a hard line in the school gymnasium, and that is completely fine as long as individuals have the phone lines and the phone numbers to be able to contact. And that only not only will end up helping you, but certainly will end up helping us as well if for whatever reason we call you and say, hey, listen, we need to talk to the moderator at the Main Street School, if you have all that communication set up, then we can certainly communicate them with them as well. Bear with me one second. Okay, a couple more reminders. Managing your EDR lines. So, a couple of things that your colleagues have brought up that are fantastic ideas is if you have the ability and you have the staffing to be able to have sort of like a quote-unquote line monitor at your EDR locations, I think that would go a long way to sort of managing the crowd. A lot of people don't understand that if they've simply moved within your town, that they don't need to appear at the EDR location to re-register and thereby using up your resources at the EDR location. Of course, you all know, and it's been, you know, since I've been here for almost 18 years, you can certainly do a transfer at the polling place. You can do restorations at the polling place. Those things can be done at the polling place rather than using up your resources at the EDR location. Another thing that your colleagues, fellow registrars, have said in terms of lessons learned is to walk the line, maybe with an iPad or a mobile device, so that you can help and look people up in advance, and maybe those people are registered to vote. You would be surprised how many people maybe vote once every 4 years or only vote for president, and all of a sudden they decide they want to be involved this year, and they're not sure if they register to vote. So looking them up in line or helping them, that may cut down on your line as well. And finally, perhaps handing out paper registration forms for those who have not used the online system, or if you don't have the capacity in your town to have a kiosk or the online system available. Hand out the paper forms so that they can have those filled out in advance so that, again, they're not wasting your valuable resources at the EDR location. And finally, my last reminder is that although this rule, there was a couple of bills in the legislature last year to change it, it was not changed. So you have our ruling within your EDR package, and we actually made it a more robust writing for you to refer to, which is the 8 o'clock rule. The current rule is that Election Day registration is just what it is. It's Election Day registration. It's technically not a polling place. So in order to participate in the election, you have to be registered to vote by 8 o'clock. And then once you're registered to vote, if there's like a second line for people at the EDR location who have registered and are just waiting for a ballot or whatever, that's fine. Those people can continue the process and vote. But they must be registered by 8 o'clock, which is different than being in line at the polling place at 8 o'clock for those that are already registered and simply waiting to vote. The law does make that distinction. And again, although there was a few bills to correct that, it was not corrected. So we are still with the 8 o'clock rule for cutoff for EDR.
Let me add something there, because we have received many phone calls about the IDS voting system and whether it needs to be available at the EDR site. So let me clear up any confusion. I think some folks were looking at an old manual or guide when, in fact, we were, you know, first saying that it was not officially a polling place. But since then, we have revised them in 2016. So if you look on our website, we have the most recent handbook on EDR and EDR procedures. You must have that IDS system operable at your EDR site. So please be sure that that happens. There will be folks who may be going around the state looking to be sure that you have IDS operable not only in your polling places but at the EDR site. So just a reminder to make sure that you do that. I want to talk a little bit about the Election Day resources that we will have in our office and throughout the state. We work, as you know, with state elections enforcement, and we will be promoting the Election Day hotline again this year. for any voter to contact us if they run into any problems or have any questions on Election Day. We will be releasing that phone number to the press as part of our normal preparations, but for your information, I'm going to give it to you now. It is 1-866-733-2469. What we do is during the day, we have several conference calls with SEEK, and we talk about the things that are happening throughout the state. We talk about your phone calls to us. And so if there's anything you see and you give us a call about that during the day, we will be sharing that with State Elections Enforcement and, as needed, with the U.S. Attorney and the FBI. And then I want to talk a little bit about our affiliation and partnership with the Connecticut Bar Association. We will be continuing our program for the legal assistance program. For those of you who are unfamiliar with this program, we train attorneys across the state who we then deploy only if necessary when problems or disruptions are reported to our office. And please be sure that if they are deployed, they are not going to just barge into your polling place without a letter of appointment. So they need to have that letter of appointment from our office, which is signed by Secretary Merrill and which they must present to you. They are not there to revise or amend anything that your moderator says. They're really just our eyes and ears on the ground to listen to what is happening. Then they call us. And then if, in fact, we believe that something should be rectified or something should be conveyed to you, we will let that attorney know.
And I just wanted to follow up with that, and I know I tell the same story year after year, but Peggy is absolutely right that this program is really a use for both us and for you. Peggy and I were able to, at one point, I think it was a special election, where we were able to go down to a town, I won't even say the town, and we were able to sort of be on the ground for Election Day. And Peggy and I were standing outside of a polling place when a lady came out and said that they had she had moved within town, and so they were sending her to the appropriate polling place. And all of a sudden, I think it was Peggy's phone rang and said we needed to get down to, you know, the fire station right away because they were turning away up to 50 people because of the polling place. And in fact, we were standing in front of that polling place, and it was one person, not 50, and it was because the individual was at the wrong polling place. So, you know, oftentimes when we send out the attorney volunteers, that's precisely what happens. They get down there, they get the facts from either you or your moderator, and they get back to us, and all of a sudden it's really not an issue that needs to be addressed. So please work with these individuals. Again, they're not there to spy on you. They're there to help us out. And oftentimes, more often than not, we're able to resolve the issue more quickly because they're able to gather the facts efficiently. So, thanks.
Yes, and I also wanted to add, I think I mentioned just earlier, that there may be some ADA observers who are visiting your polling places, and again, the goal of them is to just gather information about the services that you offer to voters with disabilities. They will be given an appointment letter. So unless they're in their own polling place, of course, they're not allowed to enter any other polling place without this letter of appointment. So please be sure that you tell your moderators that it may happen, and they should ask for the letter, again, unless they're in their own polling place. All right, I want to talk a little bit about the something new, which just happened yesterday. Actually, we sent out a cybersecurity incident plan. You should review that carefully. This is the communications plan we want you to follow should any incident occur that would affect your election resources, any technology that would affect CBRS, anything else that would affect your preparations going forward. So you should follow this plan. You should review this plan with your chief elected official in your town and also with your IT staff. And again, it's not a plan in terms of how you should react in terms of resolving the issue. It's more a communications plan with us. Obviously, you will work with your IT staff or with your chief elected official in terms of resolving whatever issue comes up, but it's a communications plan with us. Now let's talk a little bit about ballot orders. We are having people call from our office to review your ballot order certification forms, which you were supposed to have filed with us. There are still a few towns we've not heard from, so we want to be sure that those forms are in as soon as possible. Honestly, we don't know what to think about turnout this year. The voter registration has been through the roof, and if you look at other states, the voter turnout in those states that have early voting is quite extraordinary for a midterm election. I heard this morning on the radio that in Texas alone, 1 million people have voted in 3 days for early voting. Now, granted, Texas is a big state, but that's highly unusual. So we're encouraging you to err on the safe side. It's better that you have too many ballots than not enough, because remember, we have a two-sided ballot this year. And in fact, in one town, we have a three-sided ballot. In other words, they have a ballot and a half, let's put it that way. And so can you imagine trying to make copies of all of those and having that have to be hand-counted? So we're just asking you to certainly make sure you're covered with that. We also want to make sure that your moderators keep a watchful eye on that ballot supply and communicate to you as registrars before they run out. And if they do run out, they should know what to do. And another thing we want to mention, because unfortunately it happened in the primary, make sure that you have the right ballot at your polling place. We did have a circumstance where, in fact, the wrong candidates were listed because the wrong ballots were delivered to the district. So be sure that when you open the polls or when your folks open the polls, that the first thing they do is look at those ballots.
Let me jump in there just really quickly because Peggy brought it up. Let's also remember the fact that in many instances you had ballots and you had reprinted ballots and you might have sent out ballots to an individual and maybe sent out a second ballot if it was reprinted because of the new candidates, et cetera. And this is really much, much more for absentee ballots, but let's just all remember that, and remember also that particularly a vote for a withdrawn candidate is not a vote for the replaced candidate. So you just need to remember that there may need to be some hand counting of some of those ballots, particularly if a voter sends back the old, we'll call it the older, the first issued ballot as opposed to the second one, etc. I know some of you sent out paper absentee ballots early on because of the candidates being withdrawn and replaced, et cetera. So obviously those have to be hand counted as well. So plan for that, particularly if you're hiring teams of hand counters, et cetera. You need to think about things like that. In terms of counting. So thanks, Beck.
Okay. We want to talk a little bit about the ID laws and also the affidavit options. So remember, as long as you are not an asterisk voter, you could show up at the polls with no identification at all and be asked to sign that affidavit and swear that you are the person on the checklist. And you have to also make sure that you have those ID laws prominently displayed on the check-in tables. We also caution you not to post signs that say voter ID required, because in fact it may not be required. Again, if you're not an asterisk voter, and also for people to understand that the driver's license, although generally the most used type of ID, there are other IDs that can be used. For example, Ted and I have a badge that has our photo on it as employees of the Secretary of State's office. It has no address on it, but that is perfectly acceptable because you're not proving residency. You're only proving that you are the person on the checklist. So be sure that you understand that there are lots of options to show when someone shows up. And also, we ask you to be familiar with some local ordinances, because there may be towns that have local ordinances regarding where campaign signs can be placed on public property. These are questions that we get, but we tell folks that this is something we cannot answer in terms of where campaign signs are placed. Obviously, if they're placed within 75 feet, that's within your jurisdiction and our jurisdiction, but beyond that, you need to check with your local officials. Ted mentioned about communicating with the school administration and other town officials. I hope by now that people are aware of their polling places in terms of making sure that they know that they can use them and that, in fact, they don't have to change polling places at the last minute. We did have some issues on leading up to the primary where we found that there were many schools that had gyms that were not able to be accessed. And so be sure that, in fact, everything is set for you for November 6th. You want to be very careful about parking. So if school is in session, you want to be sure that you have adequate parking for your voters. You want to be sure that if the teachers are there for a development day, that they park elsewhere. You can ask them nicely if they could perhaps park further on down by the football field or wherever, so that you leave plenty of room in front of your polling places for the voters to access the voting polling place. Especially think about seniors and voters with disabilities who you don't want to ask to walk half a mile to get into your polling place. Obviously, there may be increased security protocols at schools these days, so we ask that you review with school administrators what is and what isn't required for voting activities and make sure your voters have perhaps separate entrances and exits. So if there are, in fact, enhanced voter ID requirements at the front door, you make sure that there are other access doors available so that folks aren't required to show, for example, a driver's license before getting into the polling place. The other quick thing I just want to mention is regarding EDR location. If you are a town where you have a language spoken that may not necessarily be English, very prominent in your town, it might be important to have someone in the EDR location who can speak that language. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Ted now.
Okay, so our final little topic before we'll take some questions is just some generic reminders for this particular election. The first is electronic poll books. We know that many of you have either purchased them or have been testing them, and so that's fine. Just remember that the paper list is still the official record, so you still need to have the paper list available and being used, per se. Also, the official checkers should be using the paper list. And those the voters should be checking in with the paper list, even if you're using the poll books in conjunction. Also, please, if you are using the electronic poll books, please be sure that whoever is using them is properly trained. I was able to sit through a couple of trainings, and they appear to be pretty good. But make sure that. You know, we got a few reports of individuals using poll books saying, I can't look you up unless you have a driver's license. I know the poll books allow sort of ad hoc inquiry. So please be sure that whoever is using it can search for a voter by their last name as opposed to sort of requiring a driver's license, because that is how some of the voters are interpreting that. So just be careful with that, please. Next, again, as Peggy already said, in many towns, I think we counted about 23 or 24 towns have two-sided ballots this year. So it is absolutely okay for your ballot clerk, when they're giving out the ballot, to simply say, please look at both sides of the ballot, or it's a two-sided ballot this year. I've looked at many of your ballots, and I know in big and bold on the front says, please vote the other side, or something of that nature. So that's great, but it's also okay to say it's a two-sided ballot this year, or make sure to turn the ballot over, or something of that nature. That's fine. press. The press is allowed inside the polling place as long as they're not disruptive. We always get this question every year, so please make sure your moderators are aware of it. It's the moderator's call. The press can take some stock video or some stock photos. That's fine as long as they are not so close as to see how an individual is actually casting their vote. But again, if for whatever reason the press is being disruptive or stopping the flow of voting, that would be your moderator's call to ask them to step outside. Turnout calls. We'll have some interns or somebody from the office calling you a couple of times throughout the day looking for some turnout information. Couple of years ago, we'll continue to use the electronic form where you can just reply to us. That seemed to work out for many of you as well. And finally, before we open it up for questions, we all hope that everybody, whoever wins, Republicans or Democrats, win by a landslide so that there are no recounts. But in case that there is, we will reserve Thursday, November 8th. Again, that's Thursday, November 8th at 10 o'clock for a conference call about recounts should that be necessary. We'll schedule it, and if for whatever reason we don't need it, then we will happily cancel it. But if we do, it'll be, again, Thursday, November 8th at 10 o'clock. I think it was 4 years ago or so that we actually didn't have any recounts. So maybe. Yeah, everybody's knocking on wood. Okay, so, and again, we'll send you a message just like we did this time for the conference call with a phone number and the password, et cetera, for that. So I will turn it back over to Peggy for some closing remarks before we go to some questions.
I want to thank you all again for taking the time to be on this call. I have two quick things to say because someone just passed me some questions, and I want to be sure to remind all of you that we are still looking for your IT contact in your town. So our IT director needs to contact every town with regard to their IT staff. If you don't have an IT director in your town, we need to know the name of your consultant that you use so that we can contact them about some security changes we're going to be making in the next few months. And then the other thing I want to mention is that we're getting some questions about write-in candidates. And let me just remind everyone that you should not be posting at the polling place the names of the write-in candidates on the wall. Instead, your moderator is going to keep them in a folder, and so if anyone should come up and say, hey, are there any write-in candidates on the ballot this year, then the moderator shows them. But they are typically not posted in the polling place because our statutes are very specific about what is posted at the polling place, and the write-in candidate name is not one of those things. So anyway, okay, so I think we're ready to open up for questions.
Thank you. And at this time, to ask your question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and clearly record your name at the prompt. Please press star 2 if you need to withdraw your request. Once again, please press star 1 at this time to ask a question. One moment, please, for the first question. First question comes from Karen. Your line is open.
Okay. My question is, the ADA observer that you are sending out, is that to all polling places? They are allowed to observe our election day activities? That's the first question. The second question is security for our poll workers. We have had an instance, as you know, in Seymour, Connecticut, and we've had an incident here at Norwalk City Hall of intimidation. What do you suggest? We have hired police officers for a good majority of our polling sites, but do you have any advice for us and our poll workers?
Karen, let me take your first question first. So we're not specifically sending out AD observers to every polling place. Instead, there are a few folks, and only a few, I would say just a handful, who work for the Disability Rights Network. So they will be visiting a few, but again, I don't think they will make their way around the entire state. I think they're just probably visiting those folks that they may have visited in the past. For your second question, honestly, I think you're doing the right thing by having police officers available if you're concerned and if you have any advanced knowledge that something might be happening, that's the best thing, I think, for you to do.
Yeah, and I mean, you might also want your municipality to offer some type of, you know, threat assessment or, you know, that kind of training. Certainly can do that locally. You know, we go through it at the state level, you know, what to do with a bomb scare, what to do with a threatening letter, what to do with that. You certainly can arrange that locally. So you can look into that too.
Okay. Stuart, do you have a question? Okay, we're good here.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Next question from Donna Rusgrove. Your line is open.
Hi, we have a question. We're from Burlington. We have a question about the absentee ballots that were sent out. There were 75 ballots sent out with nothing in the Amigo category. There's not even a bubble in there. And then the rest of the ballots have been sent out with that in there. So what happens with the first set of 75 ballots? Are those going to have to be hand counted?
So good question. That's what I was alluding to. So yes, likely those will have to be hand counted. There is no the replacement and withdrawal of candidates is to the candidate's peril. There is nothing that requires the town clerk to send out a second ballot unless the voter requests it. So those ballots that come back would be hand counted.
Even if they're blank, if there's nothing in there for Amigo?
Yeah, I would say they'd have to be. I mean, you can certainly call LHS and ask, but I would say that it's probably coded differently, would be my guess. Because there's no bubble in there, there's probably no XY coordinates on the memory card for it. And then the second batch of ballots that has the bubble on it, there probably is a coordinate. So I would say you'd probably have to hand count.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Next one?
Next is from Dale Winchell. Your line is open, sir.
Hi, good morning. A couple of questions. Could we give that hotline number? You only gave it once, 866. And will this call be recorded and available to listen again for people who couldn't make it? And the third one is, we received about a week ago a package with presidential ballots in it. And then know what we were supposed to do with those.
Okay.
Let me give you the hotline number again. It is 1-866-733-2469. And actually, I also have an email address, which is elections@ct.gov. And I'm sorry, what was your second?
It will be recorded.
Oh, yes. It will be recorded and available on our website. So that's great. And then the third, I don't...
Did we send you a package of, like, blank ones by accident, or are you talking about, like, voters are sending them to you voted?
It came from someplace in Stratford. I don't have it in front of me now. There's a FedEx box, and there's three bundles in it.
Oh, are they overseas ballots, not presidential ballots?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, the overseas ballot is a ballot that simply is for federal office only. Those
right.
Your town clerk uses as absentee ballots for a special group of people who are what we call expats, who are individuals who last lived in a Connecticut town before moving permanently overseas. By federal law,
right.
They still get to vote in Connecticut, but only for the federal offices. And then finally...
Yeah, they have them there, but... Oh, they were delivered
yep.
to us.
Yep. And then what I was going
to
say
so
is finally,
yeah.
Those are provisional ballots. By the Help America Vote Act, by federal law, we have to have provisional ballots in each one of the polling locations this year for those asterisk voters. So you should send a quote-unquote small supply of those to each one of your polling places in case somebody is in need of a provisional ballot. Admittedly, because now we have Election Day registration, the need for a provisional ballot is much, much, much less, but you still should have a few there.
Right. And make sure, again, for those of you who are in a split congressional town, make sure that the right provisional ballots get to the right voting places.
I just want to add that I understand that that hotline information is also available on our website. If you go to myvote.ct.gov, you should see all the information there on the hotline.
Next one.
Next question.
Thank you. Next question from Theodore Foster. Your line is open.
Yes, I have a question in regards to the 75-foot marker. You seem to have an issue every election. I wanted clarification on exactly which door, which entrance is that considered where it starts from, because a lot of our stations have double entry doors. You go from the outside and into another door to the exact election area. So where is that marker to start from?
That's a good question. So the statute says the 75 feet is measured from the outside entrance. Mm-hmm. And it specifically says outside entrance. So those of you that have a very big building where there is an outside entrance and then an outside exit, the 75 feet would be from the outside entrance for logical reasons. Obviously, the people that have already voted and are exiting are not going to be unduly aggravated by poll standards or whatever. It's the entrance. So it would be the entrance, and then it's a radius. So that also covers any inside corridors or passageways within the building as well. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question specifically, it's the outside entrance.
Thank you. He just said it, outside entrance.
The outside entrance.
Inside radius.
Yeah, but it was always
okay.
The outside entrance.
All right, yep.
Sure.
Next one.
Next question from Ann. Your line is open.
Hi, my question is about EDR. Are we permitted to give the confirmation letter to the voter, or do we have to hold it and mail it the next day?
Oh, that's a great question. Actually, you have to mail it. And the reason for that is the confirmation letter is what starts the process of an investigation if necessary. So obviously, if you register somebody and give them the confirmation letter while they stand there, then there's no letter being sent and returned by the post office if necessary because the individual actually doesn't live in your town, that kind of thing. So yes, you have to mail it because that's what starts the process of moving somebody to an active status and in the investigation with elections enforcement if necessary.
Okay, so it's irrelevant that they've already voted. It's more about the address.
Right, right. It's just a final double check on the EDR process. Yep.
Okay, and then one more question. Who do we inform about our IT contacts?
Who do they tell about the IT contact thing? They need to send it in.
Oh, okay. I believe that Alona in our office sent out information, so it would have either said Alona's name or Kathy's name or maybe the lead email box. So I would notify Alona. Do you need her email address?
Yeah, if you don't have that contact info and need to send it, just shoot Taffy an email and we can get it for you. I mean, you must all have Taffy's email from all the stuff that we send you. So if you're missing the email inquiry, just shoot her an email and we'll get it to you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Next question, please.
Next question is from Debbie. Your line is open.
Hi. Yes, going back to the hand counting of those initial absentee ballots that went out before the Amigo party was added, I did a test run on our tabulator that we used for the absentees the other day, and I combined both those initial ballots that didn't have the Amigo party with some that did have it, and the tabulator read both of them accurately. So I'm hoping we don't have to hand count them and we can still use the tabulator.
Yeah, no, hey, that's great. I don't have the ability to do that. What I would encourage those that are in that situation is you might just want to touch base with LHS just to make sure, you know, but if it works, it works. That's great.
Okay.
But, you know, just make sure, because what I don't know is if the, you know, there's different timing marks and stuff for
the
one.
They were all the same. I checked them. I compared them, and all the tick marks were all the same. So that's why I decided to go ahead and test them.
Just reach out to LHS. It'll, you know, just take you a couple of minutes to do that,
okay.
And then everybody be sure.
Okay.
So I hope that works out, because that would be great.
Yes, it would. Thank you.
Next question, please.
Next question from Kevin McCauley. Your line is open, sir.
Yes, Ted and Peggy, we did reach out to LHS prior to our test deck running of our testing, and they claim that it will read both cards. It was confirmed by our running our test deck through the tab as well. So LHS is aware, and they say they have prepared the cards appropriately.
Both.
It reads both.
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much for your input there. That's awesome.
You're welcome.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Next question is from Dottie Dory. Your line is open.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
You there, Dottie?
Yep. Go ahead. Yep.
I have two questions. First question is, can you go into a little bit about the exit poll? I believe we got an email there's going to be an exit poll. Is that correct?
Yeah, I understand that a group, Edison Research, may be doing...
Yes, Edison Research, yes.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
We did
yeah.
get that email.
Okay, yes, we're aware of that. They'll be doing that outside the polling place. They will not be doing it inside the polling place.
Okay, they have to be at the exit, correct?
Well, they have to be at the exit or outside 75 feet, one or the other.
Okay, but if they're at the exit, they don't have to be outside 75 feet, right? If they just stand outside the exit?
Right. Now, yes. They can stand outside the exit as
okay.
long as Lou was just saying, your exit is not also within 75
right.
feet.
Exactly. Yeah, I get that.
That's one thing. Or... I know of many polling places where the exit and the entrance are both within 75
right.
feet. So in that case, they would have to stand just outside the 75-foot marker.
Now, could we just make that arbitrary on our part that we want them outside the 75-foot and not talk about how close they can be to the exit?
Well... You can certainly have a civilized conversation with them, but when it comes down to it, outside 75 feet, you don't have any jurisdiction.
Right, but I mean, like, try to get them as far away so they're not grabbing people the minute they come out.
Right. So what I would do is I would just have a conversation with them and just say, hey, please, if you're going to stand outside the exit, just please do it in such a way that you're not, you know, clogging up the exit.
Can I assume they will be coming and checking in with the moderator, that they know that?
Well, again, it depends. If they're outside 75 feet, then it really doesn't matter.
Right. But, I mean, if they're trying to come closer. But we should be aware that they're there, right? I mean, they're going to be at every polling place. Do we know? Or
that I don't know.
No, they don't have to tell the moderator.
No.
Yeah, that
they
I don't
not.
Know.
Okay. All right. Good. Then my other question was, could you clarify again about the political symbols? I know that before the primary, we had gotten that notification that generic symbols were allowed. The only thing that was prohibited was something specific to the particular ballot. But at that time, I wondered about donkeys and elephants. and I was told that it was okay for the primary, and a decision would be made for November whether donkeys and elephants would be allowed.
Right. We had there's a new Supreme Court case that came out which essentially reiterated what had been happening. So what the Supreme Court said is that the whatever they're wearing has to be tied to a specific candidate. Okay? So it can't be something that's general. It has to be tied to one of the candidates whose name is on the ballot. So if there is a picture of an elephant out in the wilderness, in the jungle, that's peachy. There's no problem with that whatsoever. But if the elephant is on a symbol, which also says vote Republican, that would be a problem. So there isn't going to be a clear line that says you can't have the elephant. All it's going to be is the article of clothing related directly to something on the ballot.
Right. And,
go ahead.
So what I was going to say is the good news for you all is that Connecticut has already gone down this road back in 2012. 12 or 10 or something.
Somewhere around there.
And so we pretty much have been operating under that new Supreme Court ruling since then. And for those of you that were registrars, remember when Linda McMahon was first on the ballot, there was a question as to whether or not people could walk into the polling place with a WWE or WWF, whatever it was at that time, T-shirt with a wrestler on it. Was that close enough to connect it to Linda McMahon to advocate for her, etc., and the court told us that no, that was not close enough connected. So we've already been operating under this new Supreme Court assumption. So as what I usually tell people is that for the most part, nothing has changed in Connecticut. And I completely agree with Lou. If you have a donkey eating a bale of hay or an elephant taking a drink of water on a T-shirt about Disneyland, nothing wrong with that.
We have one particular voter who insists on wearing his Make America Great hat.
Yeah, okay. And that would be okay because that candidate
be okay.
is not on the ballot
right.
this year.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Next question, please.
Next question from Gazelle Hartford. Your line is open.
Morning. Hi, Ted. Quick question. Hartford has, we are going to have to do the hand count because we actually did not have ballots ready for when they were supposed to be sent out. Can you just go ahead and review the Amigo one? I understand that if the Amigo ones that were sent out were the original first candidate, then it was replaced with, I guess, Michelle to John or however the name goes. We are not to count those when we're hand counting the original ballot, paper ballots that went out, correct?
So just quickly, so you had a ballot with a first candidate on it because the candidate for the Amigo Party withdrew well before anything.
Yeah, we had the candidates on October 5th, town clerk's office, and Secretary of State's office was communicated back and forth in regards to the paper ballots. We wanted to hold off, but by state statute, they weren't allowed to hold off. We had to meet that deadline on October 5th. And those paper ballots were submitted of what was given to us as proof. So now when it comes to the AB counting piece, we have maybe about, I want to say 200, I'm probably giving you a low count, that are actually going to be hand counted. But the original Amigo group that first were on the ballot are on those handwritten ballots.
So yes. In regard to that, again, a vote for a withdrawn or old candidate is not automatically a vote for the new. So if somebody happened to check that box for the old candidates, you would not attribute that to the new candidates. That's correct.
All right. So that brings me back to a follow-up question. Will Amigo Group come back at Hartford as – because the second ballot, I don't believe, was mailed out because it's up to the town clerk to decide that, whether or not they can come back to Hartford with a seat complaint and we have no valid reasons.
Well, I don't know about the seat complaint. I mean, anybody can file a complaint for pretty much anything. But
yeah, we understand
the fact of the matter is there's only two ways that voters get second absentee ballots. The first way is if we or you make a mistake that's confusing to the voter. That did not happen here.
The second is
if the voter themselves specifically request it. So again, there's no duty on the town clerk to issue a second ballot because a candidate has withdrawn and been replaced. They simply issue the first ballot as requested, and if the voter comes back and says, hey, I heard that there's a new candidate on the ballot for the purple party, they can request a second one, and at that point, upon the request of the voter, the town clerk sends out a second. But unilaterally, the town clerk does not need to send out a new ballot every time a candidate withdraws and is replaced.
Okay, so only if the voter actually realizes that a new candidate is on there, and they must request it from the town clerks, which voids
correct.
Out the first one, and we go on to the second. Okay, gotcha. All right, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, next question.
And just as a reminder to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. Our next question is from Elia Alexiadis. Your line is open.
Hi. I have two questions, one about exit polling, other about moderators. So your exit polling conversation confused me. If our exit is within 75 feet of the entrance, can the exit poller stand there, or he has to be outside 75 feet?
If your exit and entrance are at the same place, then yes,
no.
They have to be outside the 75 feet.
No, they're on different parts of the building and not the same door.
And not within 75 feet.
But the exit is within 75 feet of the front door.
So then they have to stand outside 75 feet.
Outside 75 feet. Okay, next question. We were planning two districts, two polling locations within the same room. We split the room in half. And we're planning on one moderator the same moderator for both polling locations. And someone questioned that yesterday. So if you're on the phone, I'll ask you. Do we need a separate moderator for each? For each polling location in the same room.
You know what? I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know. I want to say that they changed the law to allow for that. But you know what? Rather than just answer off the top of my head and give you the wrong answer, I'm going to try to look it up. So if I can find it by the time we hang up, I will let everybody know. Otherwise, we'll send an email out.
Okay. Thank you.
Next question, please.
Next question is from Betty Tedeschi. Your line is open.
This is a security question. Can unofficial checkers show up at the polls with iPads and computers and then send information out into the community?
Yes.
Yes, they can.
They can?
Yes.
Okay. I wasn't sure they could because I know if there's security problems. I have one other question about counting the absentee ballots. We have about 300 we're going to have to count by hand. Do we have to adhere to the same rules as when ones come out with the machine counting, if they vote for two people, the unknown votes?
Yeah, absolutely. If they vote for two people when they're hand counting, you're still going to you have to attribute it's only going to count as one.
Right.
And you have to attribute that vote to a party in the same way that you would if the machine totaled it.
Right, but when they're done by machine, the state does it at the end.
No.
To which party it's going to go to.
The EMS system.
You'll right, EMS.
EMS,
yeah.
And you'll plug it. And if for some reason you can't use EMS, then you have to do it by hand. But you can't send a return to us that has a vote not attributed to a party.
So we couldn't just, they couldn't just choose a party and put it either with a Democrat or Republican or the...
No, because the law changed. The law doesn't allow that.
No, if you use EMIS and plug it in, it'll automatically attribute it for you. If you're doing it by hand, there's a robust, beyond my pay grade math formula that you would have to do by hand to do it.
Right.
So I would suggest you use the EMIS.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next question, please.
Next question from Paulette Hart. Your line is open.
Yes. Peggy, you mentioned that there's a new EDR manual. I'm on your website, and I cannot find it. I do have a letter from you or from the Secretary of State, October 2015. Is that current?
No. So, no, you need to look under lead communications. You know how to find that?
Oh, yes, I did see that. Okay. I was looking under manuals. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, for all the folks out there, I just want to remind you, the newest one should be dated October 2016. So anything prior to October 2016 is out of date. And so just use what's on our lead communications page. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Next question.
Currently, we are showing no questions, but as a reminder, please press star 1 at this time to ask a question. One moment, please.
If there are no other questions, I thank all of you. We all thank all of you for taking the time to be here. I just want to remind folks, because we have a two-sided ballot, please instruct your ballot clerks to remind folks when they hand the ballot to them that it is two-sided. And it may also be a good idea perhaps to put up a sign in the privacy booth just to remind folks as well that it is a two-sided ballot. And we certainly don't want folks to insert their ballot and then as they're walking out the door say, oh, my gosh, I forgot to turn the ballot over and I forgot to vote on the second side.
And if they do, it's too late.
And, yes, and as Lou says, it is too late. They can't get their ballot back at that point. So we just want to be sure that folks understand this. And I just want to remind folks that this conference call is being recorded. And we will be emailing a notice out to all registrars and town clerks in the next, it takes, I think, about 24 hours, but after the 24 hours is over, we will make sure that people know that it is available on our website. And on our website, it's available under Elections and Voting and then Election Officials. And then under that, there's a subtitle called Conference Calls for Elected Officials. Again, thanks for all being part of this. If you have any other questions, you know how to reach us by email or by phone.
And I still haven't been able to find that moderator answer, so I will look it up, and we will send an email out.
Okay, thanks, everyone. Good luck on Election Day. Goodbye.
Thank you. And once again, that does conclude today's conference. We appreciate you attending. You may disconnect at this time.